The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The Essentials, serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. And good evening and welcome to The Essentials, The Reset with H.E. I am your host here this evening, Hubert Edwards, and we're going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation as usual. Thank you so much for joining us. If you want to get in on the conversation, I'm sure that there will be space for you to speak. It's 323-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. Our text line is 422-4796, 422-4796. And so there's so much happening today in the news and around the world. And we want to take a pause to talk about something which we have spoken of many, many times. You know, you listen to this show, you listen to me speak elsewhere, and I'm always talking about Ubuntu and Ubuntu leadership. And it's a concept which I believe in, you know, to a significant level. It's a philosophy. Of course, nothing in this world is without flaws or without deficiencies. But I just thought that it would be a good thing if we could take a much deeper dive. And in order to take that dive, we decided, well, we should find someone who actually is steeper in this type of a discussion. And so we went all the way across the other side of the world, and we have joining us is our guest, Joseph Eyong. And he is a senior researcher and lecturer at the University, the Montfort University in the UK. And he's going to be discussing with us some of the aspects of Ubuntu, Joseph Ibat Eyong. And, you know, once we get into the conversation, we're going to be really speaking around kind of our thesis. Given what we have experienced so far, given what we have experienced to date with other forms and other styles of leadership, especially on this side of the Western world, is there a moment, is this moment now for us to take a look at something else? And especially given the fact that we are in this environment and this time of national election, is this an appropriate moment to discuss and ask ourselves the question, is there an approach available which is going to or which can make our lives that much better if leadership was to take on a different slant? It's not an issue of right or wrong, good or better, but sometimes the discussion ought to not be limited simply to who will lead, but how will they lead. And so I want to welcome to the Essentials, welcome to Guardian Radio, welcome to the Bahamas, Joseph Eyong. Dr. Joseph Eyong, welcome.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Certainly our pleasure to have you on this side of the world. Before we get into our discussion, just as a means of introduction, just, you know, give us a little bit about yourself, a little bit of a background, you know, let us understand exactly who you are.
Yeah, thank you very much. My name's Joseph, Dr. Joseph Eyong. I am originally from Cameroon and Nigeria, and I live and work in the UK as a lecturer and a researcher, and particularly interested in indigenous African leadership. I explore in greater depth the differences that exist between Anglocentric thinking and indigenous African perceptions of leadership, something which has been buried over time and history, and just trying to resurface and to propose as an alternative way to think about leadership to what we, to implicit theories or theories or practices of leadership that we see on a daily basis in organizations and in political institutions.
Right. So I think that's a good place to start, Dr. Eyong. The idea that we are, especially on in this country and other countries within the region, being largely from the African diaspora, but we are, you know, fully Western in our thinking. We have certain nuances to that reality in that we are the offsprings, if you will, of enslaved people for the most part. A lot of us are. We are also, you know, operating in our societies. Our societies and the structures of our societies are a function of colonial administration. And so as we look into, as you look into the Western world and you start to think about leadership thinking and the whole idea of pulling some of the more traditional way of doing things from a African-centric point of view, what would you say should be the immediate starting point, of the natural starting point for exploring the possibility of, you know, either you go on one end of the spectrum with what we currently have, or we look at the possibility of overlaying something new and different, new in quotes, and different in order to enhance the outcome, which is more consistent to maybe our natural way of thinking and operating.
Yeah, it's quite a challenge. At the wake of several centuries of Western domination, to begin to think about an alternative way of looking at leadership. But when we begin to look at our African indigenous traditions and customs, it becomes very clear that the way we understand the world and the way we appreciate society and the challenges of humanity is completely different from the way that the Western world conceptualizes society, organization, and enterprise. Mm-hmm. So from that broad line, you find that in spite of these differences, we continue in the most part in the formal institutions to apply or to practice, you know, theories, concepts, and perceptions of leadership which are emanating from the West. So therefore, most of the time we fail in leadership, particularly in the Caribbean and the African enterprise and politics, there is a lot of failure in terms of leadership. And my explanation is that, you know, we try to apply a particular philosophy or ideology which is different from the context in which it is being considered. So in terms of alternative, therefore, as the world becomes globalized, the forces of globalization are also coming into opposition with the forces of indigenization. Mm-hmm. So more and more people also do not want their indigenous systems or indigenous culture to vanish, but are also holding firm. So in that context, therefore, we as Africans are beginning to think about the kinds of practices or, you know, theories that are contextually resonant to the African environment. So it is in that context that an indigenous tradition or philosophy known as Ubuntu has become is becoming more and more popular, and we are beginning to talk about it and publish also in international journals.
Yes, the parallel really, Doctor, between the African experience, current African experience, and the experience in the Caribbean, from an economic point of view, could be the fact that both regions have in many, many ways underperformed their economic potential. And this underperformance has been impacted in maybe different way or nuanced way, but there are commonality. There is the commonality of being touched, Nigeria and so on and so forth, Cameroon, other countries within the African continent, has been touched by colonialism, has been touched by a Western philosophy, which in many ways were kind of alien to maybe the spirit of the people. At this point in time, operating on a Western pretext, the both region, the Caribbean and Africa, currently struggles with some of the uber individualistic approaches to competition, to normal commerce, to corporate activities, and also at the national political leadership level, where you have incidents of heroism and the rock star type of a CEO, such the individual who runs Richard Branson, as an example. We see these examples of things which are coming to the fore, and in some ways, at least from my perspective, I argue that these approaches are not always consistent with moving a significantly disadvantaged group of person from the state that they are currently to a better place. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, but generally, leadership is central to economic performance, is central to organizational performance, is central to, a lot of things that happen in society. So leadership is very important. Now, the difference that we find is that most of Western philosophy is, founded around what is has been established in the West in terms of conquests, wars, domination between one nation and the other. So the practices of leadership that we find in the Western world is one of built around wars. Another foundation of that practice is built around the Christian religion, which puts God at the highest level and man and other institutions at a lower level, which effectively creates a hierarchy of people from God to Jesus and then to kings and princes and, dukes and, all kinds of hierarchical systems which are found. So when you have the military as the foundation of organization in Europe from many years of wars in Europe, and you have also Christianity established through the Roman Empire in the UK and across the Western world, you then add to that, the individualistic nature, because then those two makes people to become individualistic, because the salvation is personal. So you have to be doing things in a particular way at your individual level to find favor in God. And also in the military, you have to perform as an individual to move from one rank to the other. So the very foundations of leadership perceptions it arises out of these foundations. Now, this is completely different from the way the Africans, and of course, I look at Africans as and Caribbeans as similar in many ways. If we look at the history of slave trade and the Caribbean populations, so therefore the psychological, the philosophical, and the ideological fundamentals in these individuals in these populations is similar, and that is driven out of a completely different set of reality, which is more about community, more about person, people orientation, more about humanity, more about communal affinity within different little villages, populations, and a kind of hierarchy which is pluralistic. So rather than one individual being the general of a military, contingent or a country, you have several people taking up different roles within a far more complex and collective leadership framework, which is how indigenous African communities have thrived over several generations before Western intrusion. So fundamentally, what we are looking at is, two completely different foundations and principles of leadership, which should, in fact, be practiced differently in these two different places, but which, as a result of, dominance or what we call cultural osmosis, mm-hmm. A stronger Western culture has been able to dominate an Afrocentric thinking to the point that institutions, governments, education, and all the things that require of the present civilization are more dominated by a Western view of the world. Now, there are consequences. So there are consequences. The consequences we find in the extent to which African economists or managers are able to operate in a way that is consistent with this context in terms of bringing out the best out of populations and, leading in respect to seeking to achieve the collective good rather than the individual. So what we see now is an importation of a Western philosophy, which then, when applied in Africa, brings up things that are never known in Africa, things like corruption. Corruption has become a very, very common phenomenon in Africa. But when you look at indigenous African cultural systems, corruption is completely a taboo. It's completely unacceptable because we have a system of collective corporate responsibility, collective accountability, and collective ownership. Mm-hmm. And these are key foundations of the Ubuntu philosophy and the general sort of communal, collective, and participatory nature of the African social system. So what we see here is, a situation in which we have to very quickly, as academics and researchers, try to reinstate or to reapply and re-theorize, a new approach to leadership, which is going to work for us in the context of the Caribbean nations and the African nations as consistent and, resonant to the psychological and psychosocial environment where we operate.
Yeah. What I'm gleaning from the point you make is that there is somewhat of a tension between natural tension, if you will, between our natural proclivities as either African or persons within the African diaspora. And I would think, you know, I'm theorizing here, and you can help me out as I go, but across the Caribbean, which is my experience, we obviously would have taken on a highly capitalistic approach. And that's natural. Well, it's not natural, but that's what would be expected given where we are in terms of our geography and our history, being, as you put it, dominated by an Anglo-Saxon type of a culture. But in the main, the persons within the Caribbean, the population within the Caribbean still maintains to a significant level, even though it may be seen in different workings, the tribal tendencies which are dominant in Africa. So for us, our tribal tendencies tend to play out the most along political lines or along community lines or along country lines, ethnicity. Those are the dominant ways in which that worked today. However, we would have seen, because of our historical background, the ravages of slavery and colonialism, you have societies which were not well prepared to move forward economically. And as a result of that, you have a large segment of these various countries or societies with large amount of individuals who operate at or below the poverty line and having significant challenges moving themselves forward. My proposition is, or my the thing I want to put to you is that the overly concentration on the individualistic type of leadership, the leadership which is more focused on the leader being the dominant individual, being the man, being the hero, is not consistent with the work which is necessary to move those individuals out of obscurity and into a central place where they can now become greater performers and greater contributors to the economic well-being of, in the first instance, themselves, their families, and community, but certainly to the country. What would you, what would be your thoughts on that? And is there some sort of a parallel that you can draw from your African experience?
Yes. Actually, the world is not just about finance and economics and all of this wealth. You know, why we are thinking about this world from an economic theory perspective is because of capitalism. Take away capitalism, of course, we know that even in communist China, there is some form of you know, economic growth and prosperity, but it takes a different dimension.
Mm-hmm.
So what I can say is that the mind of the African or the Caribbean is fundamentally one in which people do things together. You know, the idea of one individual owning millions and, you talked about Richard Branson owning an island, or you know, having so much money, doesn't come into play. That's not the kind of world that the African has built in the past. When the Western civilization came to Africa, they saw far extended civilizations with people working together, with somebody not just thinking about themselves, but thinking about the collective rather than the individual. Mm-hmm. Of course, in every, people strive to, you know, to improve themselves, and there is always competition amongst individuals in every culture, but the extent to which that becomes the defining principle in society is much more a Western importation. Now, some of the problems which we have in the Caribbean, well, besides the economic side, because you know, our brothers from Africa were taken away into the Caribbean with nothing. Now, when you are competing with somebody who is already far away economically, it's very difficult to catch up. Therefore, the poverty or the level of underdevelopment in the Caribbean states is quite understandable because they are starting from a point zero and trying to compete with people who have so much money already in the banks and economies which have taken advantage of several free labor to enrich themselves, and therefore it becomes very, very difficult to close the gap between the slave owners and the slaves themselves, particularly when those plantations and the economic resources dry out, such as the sugarcane plantations and all of those things which were massively produced in those periods. And now when you move then to a new era, the era in which we are now in terms of technology, finance, and human resource capital as a prime commodity right now, which differentiates richer countries from poorer countries, then you see that the plight of the Caribbean and the Caribbean in particular can be understood, and with that comes the other things which you've talked about, crime and community lines and all of those other things, indices or signifiers of poverty or some kind of economic deprivation. Now, for the African situation, is more dramatic because economies will thrive on the strength of their strongest members of the society. Now, when you take away the stronger people in society, over 500 years of movement of capable people to develop an economy, and as if that were not enough, you then take away all the gold and diamond, you take away the timber and any other thing that is of value for over 500 years, you have effectively sucked out, the necessities for growth and development in those countries, and therefore people become very poor and they cannot compete in different ways, educationally, intellectually, technologically. Mm-hmm. It becomes a very, very serious impediment and barrier to further economic and intellectual development. So these are historical factors. And I hope that we can start be talking about reparation, because what the West is trying to do is to avoid reparation. And in the current world order, the way that we are looking at the world now, I think we need to start to talk about reparation, because that reparation is absolutely necessary. Reparation for Africa, reparation for the Caribbean population, and the kinds of money that we are talking here is huge, which if those reparation started today, then the kinds of investment that will bring in terms of roads, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of capital transfer from the rich to the poor will be enormous. And that's why the West does not want to entertain this conversation. But as academics, we are pushing this and pushing this. But these are things that we can do at the global level. Yeah. But at our individual, it is important for Caribbeans to begin to understand that they are Africans after all. So there is a tension, as you say, between the identity and identity crisis within Caribbean nations, with Caribbean Africans, and thinking that they are not Africans. No, they are Africans. And I would want to see African governments opening up channels and possibilities through which our Caribbean diaspora can come back to Africa to invest in Africa, or to at least have some piece of land or nationality, a dual nationality in those countries where they come from. We now know that DNA is advanced now and can pinpoint exactly from which part of Africa and anybody comes from. So these are the challenges that we need to do. And if we do that, then we can have a bigger Africa, which is wider beyond, because the only people who occupy all of the world or present in every world is the African. So you go any part of the world, you see a huge population of Africans. And if Africans can work together and begin to identify themselves, not copying or, you know, following the bandwagon of European civilization and European perceptions of business, but looking at the fundamentals of the African, the love of people. I have to say, one of the reasons why the slave trade actually succeeded as it did was because of the high level of understanding and confidence and trust that the African had on the Europeans. When they came, some of them would say, well, these people are going to have a good job, or these individuals are going to, you know, we Africans did not know how to maneuver and manipulate as the Europeans came to do in Africa. And it is that humility, that communality, that sense of respect and a sense of understanding, you know, humans, that is something that we need to hold to very dearly. Unfortunately, we see that even within our own African communities, these fundamental principles, which are highly sophisticated social principles, which are, you know, important to mankind, you know, are beginning to dissipate, and people are not thinking about these things. So we as scholars and researchers, me in particular, what I've been trying to do is to theorize, you know, theorize indigenous African concepts, including Ubuntu, which is now popular, but also Ekpe philosophy, which most Caribbeans are Ekpe members, because Ekpe was also exported along with slave trade, a completely different system of social and community governance, which is based on, you know, collective compliance to basic principles, some of which have been exported into current ethics as deontological ethics, behaviors that will be characterized as acceptable in different places. So these deontological ethical principles are grounded in both Ekpe philosophy, which continues to be applied in broader areas in West and Central Africa. We can from Congo right up to South Sudan. You can see a broad section of people, which, if you look at geographically and even in population, will be far bigger than European countries, which apply these principles in community councils. Mm-hmm. And I'm studying these community councils and looking at the key principles that define how people think, how people relate to each other, and how people organize themselves at the grassroots level.
Yeah.
And what I'm seeing at this grassroots level is completely different from what I'm seeing in local council, local government councils, or local, political party systems, mm-hmm. or state or regional government systems, in most African countries.
Okay, and we are going to get into some of that. We're coming up on a break right now, but you know, before we get into the break, you know, I want to introduce this concept. You've mentioned it many times, the concept of Ubuntu, popularized, I think, on this side of the world largely through the South African experience, and Nelson Mandela, Bishop Desmond Tutu being two of the forefront figures. And this whole idea of Ubuntu says, I am a person. A person is a person through connection with other persons. It's significantly based on interconnectedness, interdependence, the whole idea of compassion, love, kindness, and empathy. There's a deeper dimension to this, Dr. Young, which I want you to speak to. Because in the African context, I may speak about Ubuntu as something out there. In the African context, isn't it a reality that persons speak of you having Ubuntu, it being inside of you, as opposed to a set of rules and values and philosophy by which you operate?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. The philosophy of Ubuntu and all its dimensions are embodied. They are embodied. So in your greetings, in your interactions with people, it is an embodied behavior which you exhibit in day-to-day interaction between one another. Because fundamentally, what Ubuntu stands for is the idea that you couldn't exist on your own on the planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You are only existing because there is somebody else. The greetings, the rituals of greetings within South Africa in particular, you will see that some of the greetings will say something like, I can see you, I am you, you are me. That is what is captured within something like good morning. So rather than say to somebody good morning, it goes deeper beyond just saying good morning and turning your face to some other directions to say, I am seeing you, you are here, I am you, you are me. So there is a continuous sort of relational connection in the process of greeting one another in the afternoon, in the evening, in the morning, in the evening, which is an embodiment of the inner being of the Africans when it is used in that way to capture the essences of what matters in from an indigenous perspective.
Definitely.
You know, that is often diluted, you know, sometimes in urban cities or in places where it kind of takes a backseat, but fundamentally, deeply, that is what you know. It is an embodiment rather than an exhibition of these principles.
Definitely, and I think we should leave it there and get into our break. We're having a conversation with Dr. Joseph Young. He is a senior lecturer and researcher out of the UK, originally connected with Cameroon and Nigeria. And we're having this discussion because I think it's an important discussion. The question that we want to come to at the end of the day, are there some pieces missing? So yes, we do some things, and yes, we recognize that we have been westernized to a large extent. You can't fight that, you can't change that. But are there some missing parts that we can use to overlay, to moderate what we currently have so that more of us, this is the essentials. Don't move. Come right back.
Pediasure, the number one brand recommended by pediatricians, now has 33% less sugar compared to previous formula and provides 25 vitamins and minerals and 7 grams of protein kids need for a healthy growth. It's a convenient meal or snack with a delicious kids-approved taste they'll love. Pediasure, nutrition to help kids grow. Ask your pediatrician about Pediasure today.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and new. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
Well, the years have come and the years have gone. Still the Son of Man keeps a-trotting on. Journey, journey on. From innocence to ex, from dependence to independence, journey. journeying on. Well, now I have loved and I have been loved. I have judged and I have been judged. Journey, journeying on. So whether calm or storm, there's a victory. 'Cause I'm in all and all is in me. Journey, journey.
And welcome back as we listen to Jimmy Cliff Gilbert's Journey. Certainly, we are journeying across the waters by your technology, having this conversation between the Bahamas and the UK, deeply rooted and connected to Nigeria and Cameroon. In your paper, Dr. Young, Leadership for High Performance in Local Council in Cameroon and Nigeria, Examining Deviant and Concordant Practices of the Philosophy. You underline what you refer to as the four main dimensions. There are seven dimensions that you spoke about, but there are initially four main themes of Ubuntu, that being one, interdependence, two, people-oriented, three, closer affinity, and four, humanity. Talk to us about this through the lens of leadership and management. I guess there's some aspect of that in it. But through the lens of leadership and the importance of these four elements in moving us from a state where we are always chasing competition, where we are always chasing this individualistic approach, to get to a place where I believe that leadership ought to be measured, and that is for the good or for the greater good, in that it is delivering value, not just for concentrated, limited, and what is generally referred to as, you know, the status quo class, but is designed to deliver value for as broad a sort of individual as is possible. Your comments.
Yes, thank you very much for bringing me to this paper. It's one of the papers that I try to look at the extent to which employees and leaders of local councils in Cameroon and Nigeria are actually applying the principles of Ubuntu. Because all along, what I'm trying to do is to find a way through which the African can begin to do things in the African way so that we can maximize on not just on output, but, you know, on ways through which we work, and work in a way that is consistent with the context in which we are and the traditions and cultures that are fundamental to our people, then we are more able to them to be loyal to the things that they want to do. So I set out to look at these councils, and I looked at the writings across about Ubuntu, and I realized that if you put everything together, what you come to try to classify the key dimensions of Ubuntu, then you come to those four dimensions which you've cited. Now, then I went then to the councils to look at these four dimensions. Which aspects of these dimensions are employees or leaders of councils applying? And this would be then the concordant, aspects of practice. And then which of these aspects of these four dimensions are leaders not applying, which are the dissonant aspects of that work? Mm-hmm. And what I found is that in most cases, people do, in fact, practice the socially oriented aspects of leadership popular within relational, aspects of work. So the relationship between colleagues, the relationship between junior and senior employees, at the level of relationality, there is a high degree of people orientation. However, when it comes to material, the material decisions or the material aspects of work, what we find is that people fall back from the social into those materialistic, and then once you get into the materialistic level, corruption and ethnicity and discrimination or favoring a group of people from your family becomes
nepotism.
Very, very common in practice.
Right.
So, you know, although we have talked about Ubuntu in terms of its social values, its social value systems, what the organizations are trying to look at in terms of deontology and ethical behavior, when you become too social also, when Ubuntu becomes so social, what it also lacks is, accountability. So our leaders tend to hide behind, community, collective sort of systems to not be accountable for things that are not happening well in organizations. So therefore, in order for African those organizations or the councils to perform effectively, then they have to continue on the social area, but also look at, you know, the output side of things so that people can take responsibility and be accountable to their actions when things have not gone well.
Yeah.
So this study is very important in terms of not only promoting the values that underpin, you know, an Afrocentric philosophy, but also to begin to open it up to modifications and self-critique to see how other relevant economic aspects of leadership can be, you know, assembled or harmonized into that social practice theory to come out with something that is balanced. Balance at the social level and balance on the expectation and performance level.
Yeah. Another way maybe of putting it is that Ubuntu suffers some deficiencies and flaws that within the organizational setting, within national setting, council setting, there is more which would need to be done in order to enhance the optimal output, whether, you know, it's a strive for economic gain or profit or just certain levels of effectiveness and efficiency. However, that said, Dr. Young, isn't it a reality that if you look at the type of a Western methodologies of leadership, when you talk about your transformational leadership, your charismatic leadership, your servant leadership, if you look at what is dominant on this side of the world, you can naturally pull from those the deficiencies. And the deficiencies are usually being attacked or solutions are being applied usually in the era of ethics and social responsibility. And is this reality that the principle of Ubuntu or similar type of a thinking aligns more with some of these other, if we wish to call, some of the softer side of Western management? And therefore, rather than being seen as an alternative to, we could then look at it in terms of a moderation of something which already is proven and have a lot of viability in terms of a management structure, or at least familiarity in terms of persons on this side of the world. How would you argue that?
Yes, the difference is what you pointed out, between which is an embodiment and exhibition, at the level of embodiment and exhibition. Of course, every society has some degree of ethics and responsibility and humanity and affinity and all of those dimensions. However, the difference which we find is that Most of the time, global organizations do some kind of window dressing or cosmetic presentations, or they use this as a cover-up to, the brutal capitalist fundamentals that define the way corporate organizations work.
They put nice values and nice values and mission on the wall, right? And then they operate totally differently.
So what Ubuntu brings is authentication of people doing things because it is right to do that, mm-hmm. rather than doing it because of creating an image. So a Western view of the world is a politicization and representation and a philosophy around what we call impressionism.
Right.
Now, when you walk on those premises, you can't call that to be Ubuntu or to be authentic. It is politics, and it is this politics that has taken the world to different places. You have wars all over the world because people come in to extract mineral and extract and take labor away from Africa, mm-hmm. Using very, very dubious and, unclear, where the African is trying to be collaborative in engaging with the Western people who have come to the front of that bargain. People are involved in camouflage and other kinds of misrepresentation of themselves.
It's a total misrepresentation of the intent. And isn't that really in a very serious way, isn't that the normative behavior that we are seeing in society, especially at the political level?
That is what you will see in a Western view of the world. What we are trying to bring is an authentication of the values of humanity, which is devoid or mitigated from an excessive acceleration of this political coloring, such that when you are engaging in a trade relationship, you do that understanding that the person opposite is also looking at things from your own perspective, mm-hmm. So that if you're talking about sustainability or talking about corporate social responsibility or corporate governance, you mean what you're saying because it is an embodiment of those principles rather than a kind of, presentation a deceptive presentation of that. And behind that, it is something completely different. So I think that the African itself, there has been a lot of dilution, a lot of disruption. But the fundamentals of African philosophy are still there. Let me just let you know that the original Africa is still in place. Nothing has moved. When you go to rural Africa, Nigeria or Cameroon, and you can go to a local indigenous village and see how people sit in a meeting, how a meeting is organized, how people deliberate on differences, how decisions are made, those indigenous Ubuntu systems are there. When you come to African urban areas, you see a completely different picture, but the fundamentals of how the African thinks and how the African does something is far more honest, is far more Ubuntu-like, is far more embodied than the politics that people play around in the big cities and in corporations.
Yeah, but Dr. Young, the pushback to that is a person would say, but Africa is in a bad state. Africa is not progressing. There is a significant level of, as you mentioned before, corruption, even at tribal levels. The rural communities are the ways of living which currently may disadvantage even the individuals within those communities. How would you push back on that, or how would you respond to that?
Yes, so that is the image that, the image that people have from outside, those of people who do not know Africa. If we just take one indicator, poverty, then we look at somebody in an African village who has a house of his own. He's built his own house. And then you come to Europe, or let me say the UK, 75% of people don't have houses here.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody
will tell you, well, they still live in better houses, because obviously we are looking at it through a Western eye.
Yes,
what I'm trying to get at, really.
If we are looking at ownership, then, is the different parameters which are used to measure these things. And when we talk about civilization and development, and take away infrastructure, then the social development and the sophistication in terms of, because things like sustainability or things like ethics are beginning to come up as values.
Right.
They are beginning to come. It is just now that people are beginning to look at this as values. Now, when people live in a sustainable way, and people live in an ethically aware and ethically embodied way,
mm-hmm.
And then people try to be, less capitalist in terms of consuming all the natural resources and bringing down all the forests and all of that. Then in the new way of looking at this way of living life, is becoming more valuable, because that is how humanity and the planet is going to survive, rather than rushing through tons and tons of cash and extensive sophistication, and then getting us to the kind of climate change that we're talking about in California and places as we see in the news today. So there are different ways to address this question. There are different ways to understand these issues. And I totally agree. I totally disagree that because people live economically simple, simplistic life, that means that they are
worse off,
underdeveloped or primitive or uncivilized. In fact, I would argue the contrary.
Yeah, but it's a Western view. Just want to, again, as we dive a little bit deeper into the issue of Ubuntu, and, drawing from your paper and drawing from some other material which I went through, I have distilled these six main tenets. I refer to them as the main tenets of Ubuntu. One being love, two, compassion, three, kindness, four, respect, five, connectedness, and six, empathy. And I strongly believe, from a leadership perspective, if we just focus and pinpoint the leader for the moment, I believe that if an individual leads with love, leads with compassion, in that you have the ability to suffer together, to be kind, to always show the level of respect where you are always thinking about the other person's rights and wishes and dignity. And to really understand that at the end of the day, that we are all joined and we are all linked. And that's where and I think in your paper, you may refer to this as interdependence. And then finally, the whole idea of empathy. How can I see the world through your eyes? Which is, in many ways, as you said earlier, even in the greetings, which says, I am good this morning because you are good this morning. How are you good this morning? Because that's the same way I am good. I am trying to see the world through the eyes of another so that I can put myself in the best position to make that individual a better person. Talk to us about these ideas.
Yes, absolutely. You hit it very hard on the head there in terms of picking out the key tenets or the dimensions that we that characterize the philosophy of Ubuntu. Fortunately, we are beginning to bring this to the West as well. In my teaching, in my university students or postgraduate or graduate students, I also teach the philosophy of Ubuntu, can begin to think of people rather than figures. So we move away from where we think of organizations as people, we think of the world as people rather than thinking about figures and numbers and, you know, our own accreditations, accolades, or, you know, promotion at work. So it is in trying to downplay some of the things that we look at in the current state of organization and beginning to look beyond, you know, these figures and our own, you know, accolades or, you know, accreditations or what do you say, our desire to stand out, you know, the heroism that defines organizations.
Individualistic into approach.
Individualistic, heroic approach. Mm-hmm. And of course, the romance of leadership is one that we haven't talked much about. The romance of leadership. So people, everybody wants to be a leader. In an Ubuntu perspective, everyone is a leader. So there is no rush for one individual to shoot out to be the hero or, you know, this struggle about politics we see in countries like Haiti, where the president has just been killed. We've seen different kinds of political problems because people want to move up to that leadership position. It's not supposed to be that. In Ubuntu, those criteria of empathy, you know, love, affinities, and, you know,
compassion.
Compassion, what that does, what all of those things do is that they bring humility into leadership.
Right.
You know, they bring humility into leadership. And once there is, what they also bring is plurality into leadership, into individualism, into plurality, humility, and collectivism within the leadership machinery of organizations, whereby we move towards a key aspect of African leadership principle, which is a multi-leadership approach, multi-leader approach. So what we have in the West is you know, a pyramid approach to leadership. So organizations are organized as a pyramid. So there's one superhero at the top of the organization. And then at every step of that organization, you have other micro, small heroes along the line. So what we have in Africa is actually when we look at Ubuntu philosophy and, in fact, Ekpe philosophy, what we see is that at the top of an organization, it's not one person, there are a number of persons at the top of that organization. We have a number of people in each of those different steps so that the rush towards the apex of the organization is not possible. It's not there. Mm-hmm. And this is the next piece of work that I'm trying to do to begin to construct a theory of a multi-leader approach to organizations so that if you have many people at the top of an organization, then what you have there is compassion because there is no rush. People are not fighting against each other. What you have there is ethical behavior because people are checking each other. They are working collaboratively at every level, at the highest as well as in the lower. So you then have a reconfiguration of the philosophy or, you know, the theories of leadership, you know, which so far from transformational, charismatic, transactional, authentic to, you know,
servant, leader, all of those.
All those mainstream mm-hmm. leadership theories, where we move them away from relational theories of leadership. We move then from from ethical and moral theories of leadership, we move then to, indigenous theories of leadership. We move then into anti-colonial and post-colonial notions of leadership, which are founded on those principles which we have identified as central to a multi-leader approach to leadership. That's a radical change. If that happens in practice in America, is that rather than having just Donald Trump, we will have John Kerry there, and then we'll have Joe Biden, who might have some Bush and some other people at the top of the organization, so that Trump does not appear to be dealing with COVID-19 from a political perspective. All of these individuals put themselves together to find the best way to deal with the pandemic. Mm-hmm. These are some practical, practical,
definitely,
examples of ways in which we can begin to dismantle the construct, the architectural construct that has been put in place, which defines the way we think about leadership and how we execute leadership in organizations.
Yeah, and I think that is important. We always see when the one-man type of a situation occurs, the flaws of that individual, the flaws of the person, the personality come to the fore. And if those are defective, if those are disadvantageous to the greater good, then they loom very large and there's nothing there to counterbalance it. And within that context, I do this presentation, Dr. Young, and I refer to leadership with Ubuntu as soulful leadership. Leadership which is decisive, leadership which is practical, inform, because if you have multiple persons always involved, then it's going to be greater avenue for persons to be in the know as opposed to, operating in silos. There's also this issue of consistency and definitely integrity. I make the point that leadership without integrity is leadership without, does not solve problems optimally. What Ubuntu seeks to do is to, in a way, canvas at least the need, the broader need of those, the constituency, let's use that word. It's kind of, sometimes it's too close to politics. I try to shy away from it. But the individuals to which the value is directed, in a way, Ubuntu says, canvas their need, understand what it is that they want, and let's work together in a communal fashion so that we can achieve this. But it is not a process of light touch. It is a process which is built around result, result-oriented. So if you're not getting the practical output with integrity, then obviously you do not have a level of leadership which can stand up to the scrutiny on the Western side and even from an indigenous perspective. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I totally agree. There must be genuine collective effort in leadership. More recently, we've developed a new approach to leadership, which is collaborative leadership theories, participatory leadership theories, distributed leadership theories, and shared leadership theories. Mm-hmm. These are theories which are new to the study of leadership, and it is because we have people have been thinking about leadership from a different perspective, and it's these non-Western concepts that are beginning to come into management that is driving these new approaches to leadership. And what I can say is that we are making an impact. Ubuntu philosophy, the philosophies and the ideas that we are developing from Africa are beginning to shift the boundaries of practice and the boundaries of knowledge in the West as well, as we begin to see them. Although they might manifest as Western creations, actually their founders and origins can be traced in from indigenous practices, whether that be from Africa or from the Maori traditions in Australia, in New Zealand, or the Aborigines from Australia, or from, you know, Native Indians in America. All of these indigenous perceptions of leadership are grounded around collective participation, around relationality, around distributedness of role rather than concentration of power. So, you know, somehow we are beginning to surface these new ways and new approaches to leadership in contemporary writings and research in leadership. And hopefully, guys, I mean, younger generations and new leaders of organizations and countries are beginning to read into this literature that somehow have an impact in the way that we see leadership understood and practiced in the future.
Yeah, it is my wish, and one of the reasons why I am actually pursuing this conversation and doing my own research and studies along the line of Ubuntu, because I believe I see a place, a space for it. And when I say it, it may not necessarily be as Dr. Young would have outlined. There are a multiplicity of approaches from different ethnic groups. But at a fundamental level, they are rooted in the concept of let's do it together. Let's respect our interdependence. Let's respect a communal approach. And we understand. We understand that there is a place for competitiveness. We understand that there is a place where one guy needs to be able to run faster than the other. There is value for country, for individual, for community, for the world in somebody getting there first. But there's also significant value in ensuring that when those values are created, it is spread across as wide as possible. A number
Absolutely.
Of human beings on the earth. And that is really where the whole thing is missing. The world uses its resources to create value. And then those values get concentrated in too many other individuals in the world grasping for something which is unreachable. We're going to take a break here, Dr. Ian, and when we come back, we're going to touch on that a little bit and also want to speak to the other three aspects of the seven dimension, that is vision and purpose, performance, and ethical practice. Because sometimes persons hear us talk about these things and they figure, well, you know, this is just a little touchy-feely type of a discussion. It won't work. But at its core, performance is absolutely fundamental to the way forward. You're listening to The Essentials, The Reset. I'm here with my guest, Dr. Joseph Young, out of UK, and he is staying up late tonight so that he can have this conversation with us. So don't move. Come right back.
Pediasure, the number one brand recommended by pediatricians, now has 33% less sugar compared to previous formula and provides 25 vitamins and minerals and 7 grams of protein kids need for a healthy growth. It's a convenient meal or snack with a delicious kids-approved taste they'll love. Pediasure, nutrition to help kids grow. Ask your pediatrician about Pediasure today.
For the best jerk in the Bahamas, you must have Balu's pork, fish, and chicken served with our delicious country-style sauce and authentic festivals. Balu's, Nassau East South. Call or WhatsApp 376-8951. Balu's, the jerk with the soul of reggae and the spirit of Junkanoo. Balu's jerk, traditional, slow-cooked to perfection. 376-8951. Get yours today.
Beulah Gal. Can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
but we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands. Or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Do ever come around, springtime's ever beginning. When true love is found, winter's over finishes, true love stands its ground.
Now I hear. Welcome back as we listen to the son of Bob Marley.
Birds have all gone south.
Sing about autumn green. We are having this discussion with Dr. Young out of the UK. Originally from Nigeria and Cameroon, and he is a senior lecturer and researcher from the University Fort, De Montfort. Am I getting that pronunciation right? So we now want to get into the talk on the discussion on the other three dimension. But before we do that, I just want to share something with you very briefly. I was listening to a lecture recently by another African academic. And he had this thing which he mentioned to as law, L-A-W. And he's saying that leaders must listen, act, and walk the talk. That's what a law is. Listen, act, and walk the talk. And the whole idea here is when we look at leadership within the Western confines, as we currently know it, and as Dr. Young has been discussing, when we look at it from an individualistic point of view, we are always focused and stuck on who will be the leader. Who will be the leader? Who is the most popular one to be the leader? Who is the one that everyone likes? And we do not spend enough time looking at the capability and the competence. I think that it is not enough to just simply ask who will be the leader. But we have to now start thinking about how this competence will be activated, will be actionalized. Because at the end of the day, it's not simply about who will lead, but fundamentally, how will they lead? And this is really what we're talking about here in Ubuntu. Ubuntu is not finding a total alternative to leadership in a broad way. It is saying in some instances, the way leadership has been discharged in many of the contemporary approaches can be refined, can be improved, and can be done in such a way that more persons will benefit. Talk to us, Dr. Ian, on the other three values or the other three dimension: vision and purpose, performance. And if you want to add a comment to the points I just made, then you can go right ahead and do so.
Yes, very good. You've actually pointed out some very interesting theoretical errors in the conceptualization of leadership. So in trying to study leadership, what most scholars have done is that rather than study the complex process of leadership, the focus has been on leader characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what we call trait theories of leadership has become the dominant perception of leadership. So trait theory of leadership defines leadership from the perspective of the physical characteristics of the individual who is perceived to be a leader. So if from that perspective, somebody who is not very tall, is short, or somebody who is not very eloquent will be disqualified. They will not be leaders because they are looking at leadership and the attributes of leadership rather than leadership competence. So what you have explained there is difficulty in trying to understand leadership from a trait theory perspective. Now, we have to now understand leadership from a complexity leadership perspective. All right? We have to move away from trait theories of leadership to complexity leadership. And now when we look at leadership from a complexity theory perspective, what we then see is that it's a very, very broad and complex process of, social adaptation, different competencies, different people bringing in contributions from different aspects of organization or society for leadership to unfold. Now, so that is why I added these three dimensions, the dimensions of a vision, the morality, and of course, vision to
performance
to not limit leadership to the social aspects, which Ubuntu is much more pronounced upon, because you need a complex unfolding. You need a complex assembly of competencies from a trait theory perspective. You need a distributedness and shared involvement in a participatory manner. You need a vision, a collective vision to drive people along. And of course, you need to set targets and set measures in order to get that. And of course, you would need to be ethical. Ethical is a broad church. So one of the dimensions of being ethical is also looking at people from equality is an important consideration. Fairness is an important consideration. So you need to bring all of these different aspects of leadership to develop or to practice leadership in a way that will address the social aspects of leadership and also address the organizational aspects of leadership. So what I try to do there is to construct a sense of leadership from a complexity perspective, mm-hmm. bringing some aspects of indigeneity and sociability alongside with aspects of project management and, of course, project delivery, so that all of these two brought together, then we'll be able to meet the demands, both social and, organizational demands, such as, output levels, profits, organizational growth, and expansion.
Yeah, in a way, you have reconciled that with the great Peter Drucker, which says leadership is about results, right? And then certainly we simply looking at how we measure that. As we come to the last couple of minutes, we have about 10 minutes to go. I found something from Mangaliso and Van de Bont. You may recognize those names. And, yeah. They had a kind of analysis which they gave. 7. People are not just rational and self-interest beings, but they are also social beings. Unity of the whole is more fundamental than the distinction of the parts. Relationships are more important than any given decision or outcome. In conclusiveness in decision making, inclusiveness in decision making is more important than speed and efficiency. Just defining some of the approaches from Ubuntu. Obviously, like I said, there are pros and cons to all of these things. The broader context is always important. Wisdom comes with experience. Is as valuable as the vigor of energy of the youth, and group performance is more important than individual stars, where the strong individual performers are those that help the group the most. And so Here they are proposing these seven, and these are just kind of my conclusion of this, but in thematically, they're saying that if you look at the leadership through these lens, you now start to have an understanding of how you can unpack and you can use this in a more fundamental way, vis-a-vis, you know, what we do or what you would refer to as contemporary leadership styles.
Absolutely, absolutely. The what they are doing there is highlighting the social part of leadership, and it's fine to do that, but we have to move beyond that into taking more seriously, and I think an indigenous perspective does not take seriously the aspect of performance and vision mm-hmm. and drive.
Right.
So. What the explanation is fine, but I propose that in addition to these, seven realities, we will add to that. But I think the point they are driving is that, in fact, there is an argument here, which is that in order to arrive at higher levels of performance, high performance, there are two ways to do it. You either do it through, the hierarchical sort of functionalist approach in which you set up structures, you set up power, authority, responsibility, and strict processes, or you, in that case, people are scared because of the systems and the punitive and all of these, people will be walking out to get to some results. The alternative would be to create an environment in which people are self managed, or where you create an entrepreneurial environment, an environment in which people willingly, as a result of those dimensions of Ubuntu, if they feel that they are considered fairly, if they consider, they see that they are given responsibility and they are respected in their role, that there is a better relation with the hierarchy, they will self become loyal participants in that organization and therefore will genuinely work their hardest because they become organizational citizens, and therefore it becomes a sort of self, the organization succeeds and achieves its objectives. So, if you take an Ubuntu perspective, then the idea is that if you allow humanity, if you allow affinities and you allow all of those empathy sort of things to be central to the way people work and relate in organizations, naturally that should generate an environment in which people perform beyond expectation. So you can achieve performance in both ways. In a way, that should sum up the difference between a more social approach to leadership and a more instrumental, functionalist approach to leadership.
Right, and there is a balance to be had between the two. So when you overlay the performance, when you overlay the vision and the purpose, and of course you want to do so in an ethical manner, and whether or not it's going to be through a hierarchical structure or the more superior one based on your presentation, entrepreneurial environment, then certainly some fantastic things will happen. We have just about 4 minutes to go. So, Dr. Ian, we just ask you to, put your cap on this discussion. Give us your closing thoughts, some takeaways from this particular show today, as we consider the possibility, the viability of adopting Ubuntu or aspects of indigenous leadership philosophies in order to move ourselves from some of the deficiencies that we are experiencing today to see a better and a more effective reality going forward. Your final words.
My final word. First of all, I want to thank you for bringing me to the show. It's my pleasure to have our program today. We've explored quite some interesting aspects of leadership. And I think to sum up, what I would say is that, there are principles. Where we come from as Africans, we do have principles that are more sophisticated, that are more respected in contemporary leadership, and we should not think that we are coming from a place where people are disorganized or where policies or frameworks or approaches to doing things are absent. No, more and more we are beginning to see how philosophies like Ubuntu, in fact, you may be aware that Linux, one of the operating systems, is already using Ubuntu as its name.
Yes.
We are also beginning to see Coca-Cola and Fanta in Ubuntu. We are beginning to see leadership practice adopted by Melinda and Gates Foundation and Bill Clinton's Foundation. Mm-hmm. Organizations are beginning to buy into the principles of Ubuntu because what we are seeing in the world, we are beginning to notice the excesses of individualism and, personalization of leadership. And of course, looking at leadership from the perspective of attributes and all kinds of physical, political presentation. So we are moving into an embodiment perspective, which would create a sense of leadership practice where people genuinely the values, mm-hmm. The human core values that will naturally create environments within nations, such as the Bahamas or within the government of Bahama or the Bahamas or any other countries where citizens can buy into that leadership, citizens can see themselves as part of that leadership, where people begin to feel okay. that the leadership is, is their leadership, and they can contribute effectively into their nations to make sure that they realize their potentials within those nations. So it's been a fascinating piece of conversation. I hope to be able to continue this with you and your audience at some point. I'm always available.
Definitely. And as we close here, I want to say Ubuntu leadership may very well be more aligned with the whole idea of national leadership, because after all, the overarching purpose is to deliver social needs, to deliver social goods, to be facilitative in its objective, and to be of service to the greater good. We have been discussing with Dr. Joseph Young out of the United Kingdom, and definitely there will be more to come. We always end here by saying, do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. You have been listening to The Essentials, The Reset. Good night. Essentials.
So essential.